all of these memories that we have as we kind of go through life, everything that is in your past has created who you are today.
You're listening to Thrive by Design, business, marketing, and lifestyle strategies for your jewelry brand to flourish and thrive. Let's get started.
Hey there, it's Tracy Matthews here, the Chief Visionary Officer of Flourish and Thrive Academy. Thank you for joining us today on the Thrive by Design podcast. I just love bringing you some very, very special guests, especially world-renowned jewelry designers like my guest today. So today you're in for a serious treat because I have Heather B. Moore here. And I first met Heather probably about 10 years ago. Maybe it was a little longer. I'm not really sure. At the New York Gift Show, which is now called New York Now. It was my first show doing it, and Heather and I had booths across from each other. And Heather at that time was doing enameled jewelry. And we got to know each other over the years, and it's been just really, really fun to see her evolve as a designer and see her kind of move in a new direction. So I'm super excited to have Heather here today. So welcome, Heather.
Thank you so much.
Yay! Well, I'm so excited for this interview because we were talking a few weeks ago and we had a really interesting conversation about your evolution as a designer. So I wanted you to come speak today a little bit more about the process of discovery and how you evolved into one of the world's most recognized designers of collectible personalized jewelry. So before we kind of dive into the content, are you cool if I just do a little formal bio of you?
Sure, go for it.
Awesome. Heather B. Moore began designing jewelry in 1994 using her extensive glass blowing and metal smithing backgrounds. In 2004, she brought the finest personalized collection to the market and began selling Heather Moore jewelry in stores throughout the country. Combining her passion for art and talent for storytelling, Heather has built a company to create the product that truly allows you to cherish who you are. Using a freehand technique where each character is individually hand-stamped, this line is about documenting your story and remembering what shaped it along the way. Wow, now if that's not a powerful bio, I don't know what is, because that's really about what the process of discovery is all about. So I'm very excited to talk to you today.
Thank you. Yeah, it's going to be fun. It's fun to listen to the bios. It's, you know, like there's so many, as I travel around, and I just got back from Seattle and seeing a bunch of my glassblowing friends, I'm like, oh my gosh. It's just fun to be able to have all those experiences and see how I got where I am today, you know, so it's kind of funny.
Absolutely. So do you want to just tell me a little bit about your story and how you kind of got into designing jewelry?
Sure. Okay. All right. Well, first of all, you know, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, and that's where I live now, and that's where everything is made. And I grew up with my father, who is an entrepreneur and works in metal fabrication for car parts. And so I grew up going to his factories on the weekends and stuff like that. And I was like the little girl Tommy boy who would jump on the line, you know, in factories and help do counts and fill boxes. And I was pretty consistent with how I would like mess up the counts and like drop things and be like, oh God. And so, you know, but I loved on the weekends, I'd be like, Dad, where are we going today? You know? And so we would always go to the factories and he'd go work in the offices. And, so I don't know, being around that, it's just kind of something that was in my, in my DNA, so mm-hmm. to speak. And I started collecting tools when I was 13, and my first tool that I got was at a garage sale because my mom and I always went to garage sales. And I borrowed $10 from her and I bought this stamp set from a tool and die guy.
Cool.
Or family. Yeah, and it was a big one. It was actually our size 4, and now our size 4 sans serif. And you know, these pieces of steel were like maybe a half inch by half inch or
oh,
a little
wow.
bigger. And so they were very big. And then over the years, I collected some smaller ones. And so then I ended up, I went to boarding school. And when I went to boarding school, I remember my parents were generous enough to be able to pay for college. And my dad was very concerned about, I was a ski racer. And I wanted to kind of pursue that because I was really good on the East Coast. And he was like, that's crazy. And then I also was into the arts, and he's like, how are you gonna make money in the arts? I mean, you gotta work for me and all this stuff. And so I ended up going to do business and psychology in Chicago and in college. And my sister was in anthropology, and she went to Kathmandu, and she lived in Nepal in Kathmandu, and she lived and worked with a jeweler's family. So, I mean, let's see, I'm trying to think how I could blend this. So anyway, so she was doing jewelry in Kathmandu, and I was doing business and psychology. And then we took a drawing class together in the summer, and I would go upstairs into the glass blowing area and watch the glass. Artisans make things, and I just thought it was so fascinating. So I went back, to college to do the business and psychology. And the following summer, this is so funny, but I went with my boyfriend. We drove across the country. And because he lived in Ojai, California. And I, the idea was to start a company there. And the previous summers, I had stone restoration companies, and I also had a steel coating company. So it was like tarring driveways.
Right.
When we went out there, he just didn't seem like he wanted to start a company, and I didn't know what to do with my time, and I really needed to make money. So my mom was like, Heather, why don't you come back home and take that glass blowing class you were talking about last summer? So I ended up doing that. And when I came home, I'll never forget, I was working, and I know there was, I was supposed to go to a party, but, as I was making, I was working on some glass, goblets or wine glasses. And I looked at the clock, and it said it was 12 o'clock at night. And oh my gosh, I had to close the shop down. It was the building's closing, and I totally forgot about the party. And I thought that was a really interesting moment for me, because I was like, wow, this is, I'm loving my time right now.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be around people or at a party, or wasn't feeling, sad or, lonely or whatever. I was just like completely driven on what I was doing, to the point where I lost total track of time. And as soon as I recognized that, I was like, okay, wait a second. This is actually a powerful, mm-hmm. Thing to recognize. And now I know what I should be pursuing. So starting, from there, then I ended up leaving this college I was going to in mm-hmm. Chicago. And I wanted to apply to go to the art school.
And, of course, as we do.
Yeah. And I'm like, oh my gosh. Okay. So I did ceramics in high school, and that's it. And so I knew how to throw a pot. So I went to the interview, and I said, well, I took the drawing class last summer, and it was basically like a model would sit there, and then you would draw the person. And that's, that's all I had under my belt. And he said, well, why don't you bring me a sketchbook? Because I really need to see what you've done. And I was like kind of stuck. I was like, well, what's a sketchbook? Like, what do you mean? Like, where do you get them? And
oh my God, that's hilarious.
And he goes, you have to do a drawing of a bike. You have to do a drawing of flowers. Like, I want to see what your capabilities are. And I was like, well, I really don't think I have, I don't know, but I know I'll be good. And he was like, well, that's not how you get into college. You can't just say, I'll be good. And I was like, but I will be. So I came back 2 weeks later with a sketchbook, and he was like, this isn't good enough. And I was like, oh, but that doesn't matter. Like, I understand that I'll be good. I mean, I think it's about when you start recognizing when you envision yourself as mm-hmm. doing something good, you'll get there. You know what I mean?
So that's like the power of like visioning. That's amazing.
Yeah.
I love that.
And I was like, look, yeah, I can't draw a bike. And you know what? I probably still can't draw a bike.
Oh
but
my
it
gosh.
Doesn't mean that I'm not going to be, good at what I want to do. So anyway, I ended up going to getting into the art school, which is awesome. And I remember,
by telling them that you were going to be good.
Yeah. They were
like, okay. All right, we trust her.
Yeah. I was like, give me a chance. And then, And I remember also having a, you know, I felt bad. You know, I went to the doing business in psychology, although I loved my economics teacher. It was so funny. He was so excited about micro and macro economics. Like, I thought he was going to throw up in his trash can every lecture. And so, I mean, you know, for me, I think that was, I wouldn't want to take that away from, you know, my memory bank, because that's what drives you into understanding your numbers when you come, yes, when it comes down to owning your own company. And my micro and macro economics of wholesaling or, yes, direct retail, you know, all of that stuff is the same thing. So, God, it was, I just remember thinking, gosh, you know, I feel, you know, my parents have, you know, helped pay for this and those, that school. And now I'm going to go to this school I really want to go to. And I figured out how many days the school was open and what the hours were. And I figured out it was $45 an hour.
Gosh.
Yeah. So I broke down the tuition by the hourly, you know, rate of opportunity, you know. And I was like, yeah, it'll be good. It'll, you know, and he's like, oh God, okay, whatever. You know, just, know what you're doing, learn the, you know, tools as much as you can. And so I went into Focus on Glass and I did minor in metals and I took one jewelry class. I was really into the glass. I dressed like a Mennonite. In the summertime, I worked at an amusement park, Cedar Point, which is over in Northern Ohio. And I literally had to dress like a Mennonite and blow glass every day. And it was awesome because that allowed me to, A, get paid to do what I love,
yeah,
at the time, and get better and better. You know, like, how can you, you know, because, you know, if you rent a space at a studio, it's, you know, it's expensive. So this was a great opportunity for me to get paid and get better and better. And then I also was doing cast glass. And one of the things I was doing, I remember, you go through art school or life in general, even now, and you dabble in different, you know, I don't know, art pieces. And some you like and some you question, like, what am I doing? And what is it that I like about what I just made? Yeah, so Wendy was, okay, so now I'm at the art school and Wendy was now at Pratt. So she also went into the arts. But, and she's like more of a philosopher, you know? Mm-hmm. And then my other sister, Hallie, is a brilliant writer. She like got the top award at Dartmouth for her,
right,
thesis on Bob Dylan, you know? Like, everybody got upset about it because people were writing about Chaucer and this and that and you know, who gets the top award, but someone was writing about Bob Dylan. And so these guys are constantly, you know, Hallie's bringing up quotes and Wendy's, you know, kind of talking about stuff all the time. And so I was doing these really pretty glass frames and I asked Wendy for a quote and other people for quotes too. And Wendy's quote was, I said to my sister, and she said to me, come, let's play laughter together. And I took my stamp set that I got when I was 13, and I stamped it into a piece of silver, and I riveted the sides, and then I put this elaborate glass frame around it. And I did that to a number of other ones, too. And when we were going through my thesis, I was like, you know, talking about the process of the pieces that I was making, and what did I get the most out of? And I was talking about, what is it that when you buy art or you make art, then you have to put it somewhere, you have to maintain it, mm-hmm, and all this stuff. And I was like, but yet, and I almost felt like I was, you know, I don't know, like giving someone the burden of holding onto a piece of art or something, you know?
When it should be their pleasure, right?
Exactly. But then when I saw it also, I was like, but I really got a lot out of asking something from someone, asking for a quote and not knowing what they were going to give me. And then when they did give me something, I worked the frame around that quote.
Yes. It's almost like working backwards.
Yeah. And so I'm like, give me a problem and let me solve it. And I love that. And so, you know, that was like right when I was graduating. And because and then of course you got to get a job, right? You're out, yes, of college. And what are you gonna do? And so I had reached out to a bunch of artists to see if I could get jobs. And I also had contacted Pilchuck Glass School, which is, mm-hmm, a famous school out in Seattle where all of the you know, Dale Chihuly started it, and it's a really an amazing, just creative environment. And at the time, they hired me to come out and be a, I was almost like I was on the marketing team for Glass. So they brought out famous artists, and my job was to look at their work and then say, how can we implement Glass into your work? You know, so it's almost like introducing a medium to someone who doesn't know anything about it. And so I was placed with Judy Pfaff, and Judy Pfaff is an artist out of upstate New York now. Mm-hmm. And she worked at the time, she was working at Columbia. She's in all the history books for kind of, she was like, went to Yale in the 70s, so kind of geometric artist, very collage oriented with her drawings, but then her installations, you know, they're more about, you know, turning a space into a you know, a discovery. So if you walk through her installations and they're found objects and, you know, twisted steel and all that stuff. And really cool stuff. And Wendy, when she was at Pratt, she introduced me to Judy Pfaff, and I didn't realize that that was who I was going to be placed with 3 years later.
That's so
cool.
The
whole thing was really cool, how everything was intertwined. It took me a couple days to realize, even once I met her, that this was my favorite piece of art that I saw in New York with Wendy. But at the same time, I was so immersed in Glass that I was completely unaware, or not even, it was so funny, about how famous she was, or how important she was as a woman artist, kind of breaking through the glass ceiling of men artists in, you know, in the 70s and the 80s. So anyway, so in light of that, I was like, this is what we're gonna do, and we're gonna do tar grips, we're gonna do da-da-da-da-da. And I, you know, got the glass blowers together, and we all worked together and made this amazing amount of work for her. And she was blown away. She was like, this is crazy. Like, we filled a semi-truck.
That's awesome.
And meanwhile, I had another job to work with Flora Mason, Joey Kirkpatrick, and out in Seattle, so I got an apartment and everything. I was all ready to go. After that stint, I had to go to D.C. to go get my dog, who was staying with my glassblowing partner, who I just saw last week in Seattle, and when I was at a jewelry store. But then I went to go get Chutney, and then I went up to New York to see my cousin Tyler and see Judy, and then I was going to drive to Seattle. So when I got there to New York and hung out with my cousin, Judy, and then we went to Judy's apartment, she said, Heather, I'm going to give you this studio, which is two blocks from the Trade Center. It's like down in Tribeca. I'll give you this studio for free if you stay here and don't go to the glass. Just stay here and work on your photos and drawings.
Shut up.
Yep. And so
is that how your first collection was born?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
So I was like, well, wait a second. And she's like, no, I don't want you to do glass. You're good at glass, and you know that. I mean, you got the job you wanted, but why does that mean that you need to take it? Why? Because you could learn more or whatever. I don't know. It was just like, and I was like, she's insane. And so I said no. And I was like, I drove home, and as I was driving through Pennsylvania, I was like, you know what? I did get the job I wanted, and I am as good as I want to be, but there is so much more to learn. So I ended up calling Flora and Joey and saying, you know, you guys, I think I'm going to take a hold on that idea. Appreciate the offer, but I'm going to go to New York. So I went to New York, and I worked in the studio in Tribeca for like 4 months. And then Tyler, my cousin, was breaking up with his girlfriend. I was like, well, let's get an apartment together. So we went to Greenpoint, Brooklyn, which is near Williamsburg.
Yeah.
And we got a place there. It was like a 2,000 square foot storefront right across from the Polish National Hall. And there's a peach tree in the backyard, and it's awesome. So we ended up moving there, and I lived there for like 9 years.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so I was working with Judy, and so then, when Tyler and I moved in together, we ended up going to, she was like, well, can you help me with some of my drawings? And can you help me with some of those pieces that we made out in Seattle and help me incorporate them into our pieces, in DC and Denver and all over? And I was like, okay, I can help her. And so in the mornings I would help her with her drawings. And then, with installation art, it's really kind of fascinating, just an avenue of art, where when you have a government building, 1% of the building cost. So if it's a 1% of the full cost of the building has to go towards artwork to fill the building. So there's like a little sub industry of people that do pitches to government buildings for their artwork. So you would make the building, like a little mock up of the building, and then show your art piece in it, and then photograph it in interior angles, and then send it to them, and then there would be a review board, and then you'd either get it or you wouldn't get it. Mm-hmm. And so I started working with her on those projects, and she was like, she had to weld a lot of things, and so she was like, have you ever welded before? And I was like, no, not really. So she showed me how to weld, and I think because I was so good at glass and the viscous material, like a fluid material, I was really good at welding.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, so I became her principal welder for her large-scale sculptures across the U.S. with a bunch of people underneath, and it was amazing. It was a great experience. But then on the weekends, I mean, I was like, so you get so dirty when you're welding and working yes. with big pieces. And my sister Wendy lived out in LA, and she was doing fashion show stuff, and she was doing movie things. And she'd call me and she'd be like, oh gosh, I need earrings, I need this, I need a long necklace and for these fashion shows. And I'd be like, okay, on the weekend I'll make it. And so like every paycheck I would get a new tool for just to help make jewelry for myself. Mm-hmm. And so I would send her stuff out, and I was like, gosh, this stuff is so small and it's so easy, yeah. and so fun, and like immediate satisfaction. Whereas like some of these projects took, months, like one took a year and a half. The last project I did, it's actually the largest hanging installation in America. And for all of, the young ones that are starting jewelry companies or anything in the crafts, there's the New York now, but there's also the show in Philadelphia, the craft. Shoot, what's that show called?
Acre?
It's the what?
Acre?
No, it was the gift show, but it was in Philadelphia. What show is that? I wonder if it's the craft, that's like the American Crafts show. Well, anyway.
Yeah. The show in Philadelphia.
The show in Philadelphia. You can just cut off. But there's a show in Philadelphia that has similar to the New York Now show. And it's usually at the Philadelphia Convention Center. And it's an old train station. Have you ever been there?
I haven't been, no. I never did Philly.
It's a really beautiful space. It's connected to the Marriott right downtown. And but it's the old train station, and so that sculpture that we did hangs from the ceiling, and it's the largest one in America, and it's 100,000 square feet of just awesome,
My gosh.
Yeah, so I welded that whole thing, and then when we had to install it, we had that welded upside down. But when we were working on that project, that's when Wendy was always asking for jewelry, and I brought up the Polish National Hall because I didn't have a TV. Tyler and I didn't watch TV, and there was the ski Olympics. The Olympics were on in the winter, and I went over there to watch the skiing, and I was making chain, and I had some of my glass blowing buddies had made like glass tubing, and then so basically they made these pretty glass beads, and so what I was doing, I was taking the chain and soldering it shut with the glass bead and then making these long chains. It was really pretty. And so I was cutting the links of the chain at the bar at the Polish National Hall watching skiing. And this old man was next to me and he was like, what are you doing? And then he asked if he could help. And he owned all these taxi medallions in the city, and so he didn't need to work. And he seemed like he might have drank a little bit too much, and obviously seemed like he needed something to do. So I was like, well, why don't you come over to my studio and you can help me make chain. And he was like, okay, I'd like to do that, you know? And it was great. I felt like I was helping him because he clearly needed to do something with his time. And this one day he showed up, and he would show up like intermittently. So I was like, oh, yay, you're here, you know? And because I didn't pay him or anything.
Yeah. He just wanted to make some chain.
Yeah, he just wanted to be productive, you know? Mm-hmm. And so he came over this one day, and he said, with a kiln. And he's like, I don't know what to do with this. So I'm like, oh, that's an old metal tempering kiln. And I'm like, but we could use it for enamel. And so
this is it.
Yeah. And so I was like, wait. So I ran to 46th Street. Oh, okay. So this I have to tell this other part. But when I ran 46th Street because I was like, I don't even know how to enamel. So I had to get some books on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking like the, you know, 95, 96. So we didn't have the internet to like quickly Google it or anything like that. So, but I wanted to say really quickly before, when I was making all that chain, that was when I was kind of wrapping it up with Judy and saying, okay, I know I really do want to start this jewelry company. And I went to Soho to a store called Stephen Allen, and the owner is Stephen Grant, a really great guy, who actually reminded me of my cousin, Tyler. So I was immediately comfortable with him. But I remember walking in, I remember what I was wearing, because I had this old, I only went to thrift stores for my clothes, and I had this great blue shirt. It was like a button down that reminded me of my pop, my mom's, my grandpa. And I remember thinking, well, I need good luck. So I put that shirt on, and I went into the store with my necklace on, with the glass beads within the chain. And I went I just walked right up to Stephen, who I didn't know him from Adam yet. And I said, hi, I think that you will make a lot of money if you sell my chain in your store. And he looked at me and he was like, okay. And then
you'll make a lot of money if you sell your chain in my chain in your store. You gotta love that. How easy was it to convince him to buy your jewelry back then?
Yeah, I was like, I think that it will go well with what you have here. And he said, yeah, I agree. And then we started selling the chain. And then meanwhile, then, you know, that old man, I met him and I started learning about enamel, and then I brought some other enamel over to the store. And then he said he blew out the entire second floor of the studio of his store. There's a balcony, and he would go up this little back staircase and then look down, and he made me a whole studio for free. He was like, I want you to work here all the time. I'm like, okay.
Stephen Allen?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well,
Stephen Allen. It was when it was on what was it, on Broome and Grand, maybe?
That's so cool.
Yeah, and it was like right over where Jonathan Adler started his first store. Do you remember that store?
I don't. I wasn't in New York then. I mean, of course, I knew Stephen Allen, the store Stephen Allen, but I don't know where.
Yeah, so now Stephen's his store is down in
Tribeca, right?
I want to say it's in Tribeca. Yeah. Anyway, so it was just really funny because I just loved how my studio was upstairs, and then
I love that.
I know, and like Matt Ryan would show up and all the models, and he'd be like, Heather. And there was this really funny girl that worked there. Her name was like, I want to say her name is Judith, and she was from the Bahamas. And she's this beautiful girl with like really pretty, she was black, but she had this beautiful like blonde hair, you know, or I don't know how her look was, but she's like this gorgeous girl. And I'll never forget, like, the girls would come into work and they'd like put on like pretty outfits. And I was working upstairs, and this one time I heard Judith still started crying. She was like whimpering. And it was really early in the morning. And she goes, like that. And I was like, Judith, are you okay? And she goes, I just look so good today. And I was like,
oh my gosh, I love that.
My God. And we just, it was so funny. It was like, I'm getting totally sidetracked, but it was such a fun and warm environment to be around, with, you know, full creativity and whatnot. And so, you know, I showed, Stephen my enamel, and he at the time was really selling majority to the Japanese stores. So I kind of launched this enamel line with Stephen's, you know, really with his blessing, so to speak. And then Wendy, of course, tripping in the background with all of the colors that were in and what's going on in LA and this is what you, you know, da 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 da. So we immediately got some Japanese clients, but then that was the year that I did my first trade show.
Was that when I met you, like right around the time when I met you at New York Now?
Well, it was the Ian K show.
Okay.
But it was the Ian K show when it was at the Plaza.
Okay.
So that was like, but that was the last year it was ever at the Plaza, and then they moved to the Piers. And so I was like, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to do this? This is crazy. And like literally my line sheets were drawings. And I didn't have a scanner.
I love that.
And so I would use the copy machine to like, okay, so I'm going to make these links, right, of, you know, cast enamel pieces. And so I would draw it like 3 or 4 times and then copy, and then like literally cut it out and like stick it all together and make a necklace. And those were my line sheets.
And we got away with a lot back then, huh?
Oh my gosh. And I have a catalog of all of my line sheets. Or like a
box. Oh my God, that would be so fun to look at.
Oh, it's so funny.
I have mine somewhere in storage. So I want to stop you there because, you know, your lines evolve so much. I just, like, really briefly, can you tell us a little bit about the impetus? So you had this great enamel line, you know, you had a mentor who got you sort of into welding and, you know, into art installation and blowing glass. And then you talked about your entire evolution. So, but the evolution doesn't stop with the enamel jewelry. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you started to transition into the hand-stamped, more personalized stuff?
Okay, so basically what we ended up doing was, I kind of launched that enamel line, I want to say it was like in 96.
Mm-hmm.
It was in 97. And I had just gotten married, and I went to this show to kind of launch it. I hadn't figured out pricing yet. I mean, like, the show was starting the next day, and I was like, okay, this is the material, this is how long it took, I think this should be the price, and I'm like handwriting it. I mean, I was kind of winging it, and you know, but these shows are expensive, and
yeah,
so. But that same day, the day before the show, I found out my sister had gotten in a ski accident.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, that makes you kind of wonder, you know, what is it, what on earth are you doing? You know, like, what's the importance? Where are your priorities and all that stuff? And I remember my uncle coming to the show and, you know, talking about like perseverance and, the value of taking this hard information, not like, you know, just wallowing in it, but more like using, it's almost like, I think he said it was like a Tai Chi kind of theory where you take these, maybe it's negative information, but you absorb that information and turn it into a positive. And so I, you know, and you know, since she was such a big part of my enamel line, you know, it made me want to keep it going. But it also made me kind of, you know, you go back to your parents' house at, you know, Christmas or Thanksgiving or whatever, and you look at your old stuff, your artwork that you made. And I did find that piece of art that had Wendy's plaque on it. And I tore it off of a piece of art and I put it in my wallet. The one that said, I said to my sister, and she said to me, come on, let's play laughter together. And it's literally stamped on a piece of silver. It's just like what we do today.
Mm-hmm.
And so kind of the transition of how did I discover what I was doing? So then I started designing you know, when you go to the ENK show or the gift show, everyone's like, what's new, what's new, and da da da. And so Banana Republic, you know, came up to me and they asked me to start designing for them, and JCPenney, and so I started doing more fashion stuff. And then, like, fast forward maybe 3 years, I moved back to Cleveland having had my first son, Henry. And then I had Leo, then I had Oliver, and when I had Oliver, there was a store. When we moved back to Cleveland, we have this beautiful Christmas tree, and I was like, oh my gosh, I don't have any Christmas tree ornaments. And so I made all these Christmas tree ornaments, and I started selling those. And that was an amazing, you know, it was just kind of opening your doors [S2] Yes. [S1] To a new environment of museum stores and, you know, all that stuff. And they were metal, so I kind of made them with a hot glue gun. They were drawings, and then had them cast. And because I needed ornaments that I knew the kids would pull off the tree because they're crawling around on the ground, mm-hmm. all the kids are, and they're pulling the ornaments off. So I needed them to be durable. And, you know, it was just like my solution, but then that kind of blew up too. So that was a really lucrative business. And so then, you know, at one of those shows, the trade shows, the, you know, magazines come around and they ask for, you know, when a magazine comes to your booth at a trade show, you know, your goal is to, you know, it would be awesome. It'd be awesome if they did an editorial on you. And, but then to be a solution provider for the person that's writing the article, you got to say, well, what are your projects? Like, what are you working on? Cause then you could better direct them. You can't just be like, well, here's my stuff. And I don't know if something, cause you know, it looks good, just pull it or whatever. You really need to engage in them and say, well, what are you looking for and why? And then direct them to the best piece that would be best for their editorial. And, as I was having a conversation with someone from Real Simple, they were like, wait, you moved to Cleveland? Why'd you move to Cleveland? And I said, well, you know, that's where my parents are from, and I bought my great-grandmother's house, and I just, you know, it's a nice place to, you know, have a family. So they asked me if they could send a crew to Cleveland and photograph my house and, you know, just like our lifestyle and the shop and how we make, I was having all my jewelry was still being made in my basement. And so they came, I had my third son, it was like he was 3 weeks old. So, you know, you're young, you know, your mother, you haven't slept at all, not feeling that good about the way your body looks. And they're like, wanted to photograph me. And they did an 8-page spread in the article, in the magazine. And the stylist was really cute. He was like this beautiful Brazilian gay guy that was like, literally went into my closet and was like pulling out clothes and trying to figure out what I should be wearing for the photo shoot. And I remember just laughing and being like, this is so silly. What am I doing? And they said, okay, so talking the story that's, you know, of you know, why you went to Cleveland, but they have sidebars questions in the magazine, and one was like, what kind of skin care products do you wear? What's your, you know, what's your favorite shampoo? And then another one was like, what's in your wallet? And I was like, okay. These are such silly questions, but I took out my wallet and I pulled out that plaque.
That was your sister's.
That was my sister's, and the stylist guy was like, oh my God, that's so pretty. And that's a quote from your sister, you know, and all the stuff. And I was like, that's so funny that he's so interested in that, you know, like that's mine, you know, like that's only for me, you know? And I didn't think anything of it, but they photographed it in my hand and they put it in the magazine. So then, you know, I'm still doing the enamel, 2 years go by, I'm getting a little bored, and you're like, gosh, you know, what am I doing with my life? Like, I've got these kids, and it's awesome, and, you know, I found a mission statement, you know, like, you know how you do about us on your website?
Yes.
Well, it was like one from 2004 or 2003, and it was like, I wake up, you know, I work in the mornings, and my husband works in the mornings, and I work, or he's with the kids in the mornings, and then I'm with them in the afternoon, or something like that.
Yeah.
And it was like how we broke up our day, and how, you know, as parents, you know, we were working equally and spending equal time with the children and all that stuff. And it was kind of funny to see. Anyway, so then fast forward. Okay, so now you're like starting questioning yourself. I've been doing the enamel for like 9 years and great run with it, but I'm getting bored. And for me, you know, I was designing for Banana Republic and JCPenney was really fun. Like I felt like I was bragging. I was like, oh, I'm designing for blah, blah, blah. Yeah. But at the same time, the process was so arduous. I was like, really, a 75-page work order for one item? Like, and if you made a mistake, they would charge you back. And like, if you, something wasn't packaged right, they would send you a $150 bill. And I was like, oh my gosh, my margin is just like vanishing before my eyes. And so I didn't, you know, and I was still doing my fine enamel, but I just was getting tired, frankly. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. And so at one point, I think I had like, it was dwindling down to like, you know, people do want to see new things and stuff like that, but I was so involved with my kids and I was just having trouble, like, I don't know, figuring out what exactly I want. I definitely felt like I was stuck. I had my fourth child, so Coral was born. And then this one day, Henry got the RSV virus. It was a very weird virus that was going around, and he was like four or five. And so I spent the day at the hospital, at the Cleveland Clinic, with him going through that MRI machine, and a doctor coming up to me and giving me a hug, and I was like, hey, that was really weird, and I don't want a hug. Like, I hope, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? This is... And so I came home, and Henry was fine. He just had to have, like, IVs, and his, like, it was totally fine after, you know, what, a couple of days. And I went up to the offices in my house and where the people were working, and I said, you know how when someone quits, they give you 2 weeks' notice? Mm-hmm. I gave everybody 2 weeks' notice that they needed to find a new job.
Oh, my gosh.
And I was like, I think this isn't working for me. Literally, I had... You know how when you have a job, you get 3 months off for having a baby, you know?
Yeah.
With my fourth child working full time, I took 15 hours off. And then I had to ship, you know, a 6,000 unit order Banana Republic somewhere. I don't even know. And it's just like, gosh, what am I doing? This is crazy. And I mean, granted, like, you know, I was in my house, and so I wasn't, the kids were still around and stuff like that. I was just really tired. So when I had Coral, I remember, so people left and I was doing it by myself. It was like totally slowing down. And I found that article from Real Simple. I was cleaning up the attic and I found the article and I was reading it and I saw the picture of the plaque and I was like, God, you know, it's just, that's what it's all about. It's like your story, you know, and you know, how can you make something like, I mean, here I am, you know, now it's 20 years later almost, and I still have that plaque in my wallet. But I remember thinking like, gosh, where are those stamps, you know?
Yeah.
And I went down to this, you know, to my basement, and I was looking around and I found them, and I found some little piece of silver and some gold wire, and I stamped my kids' names in them, and I did it just because I wanted to make something for myself. I was so tired of fashion, and I was like,
yeah.
How can I just make something for yourself, Heather? You're taking a time out. You need a time out.
right.
And so I made these charms, and then I had to go to the New York gift show, you know, for the fall show. And I was showing my enamel, I was showing my ornaments, and having my regular customers, you know, like place reorders. And I was kind of bored and, you know, like, love walking around and seeing all the great things people are making and hearing about, you know, what they're, you know, into and why. And someone was like, well, tell me about your necklace. And I was like, oh, it's just got my kids' names on it. And they're like, whoa, that's so cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah. And I was like, why do they think it's so cool? This is just for me.
Yeah, you're like, I'm not making it for anyone else. This is just for me.
I know. I remember actually flinging the charms behind, like, my collar and being like, I don't even know what the price of gold is. Like, I couldn't even tell people, like, how much this thing would cost. And, you know, if you think back, if we looked at the gold charts, man, I bet you gold was like only $400.
I know. I bought so much gold at, this is a sidebar, but so much gold at $400, and I held on to it for a long time and ended up, you know, having like, getting like a great return on investment because.
Oh, huge. Yeah. I know. Oh my gosh, me too.
This is how you evolve as a designer and like really discover what you're meant to be doing. You, you know, walk through the fire, you kind of fire all your employees. Keep them all notice. Then you start, you scale down, start over, and then rebuild.
Yeah. But I think, you know, I think that, you know, when you, you know, when we think about what the process of discovery is, it's about being brave enough to make something and just figure out, learn about the process and see if it's something that is interesting to you.
Right.
Because you have to stumble to get up, or, I mean, I don't know, like you have to, for, you know, if when you stumble, you know, you obviously have to like get yourself together and get up. But if you trip over something, that's awesome. If you trip over something that's cool, and then you turn around and you find out what you just tripped over, that might be an awesome new opportunity. So, I mean, my dad always says, you know, Heather's always taken right and left turns more than anyone else I know. But I think, you know, like with, you know, deciding not to take the glass blowing class and then, or, you know, job and then going to New York and then from New York, you know, taking in a person that needed to do work, and he brings you a tool that's, I mean, and then learning from that, I mean, my pop used to always tell me, like, you're as good as the tools that you have. And so when I was little, every Christmas, I remember Wendy was really into, you know, she was into the fashion and movie stuff. So she got a scanner and I got a welder. And then she got a computer, and I got, what did I get? Oh, I got a casting machine. And, you know, it was always like, you know, he wanted us to invest in, you know, in the tools that would make us grow. And I think that that's really important to kind of always try to think outside the box and be brave enough to, you know, make that step, I guess.
It sounds like this process for you has been just sort of a process of investigation almost. Like, yeah. I'm going to dabble in that. Let me see if that's going to work. And then, you know, your story is so interesting because you started, you know, in a traditional like college environment, moving into art school, trying to convince the art school people that you're going to be good enough without a portfolio. I mean, it's crazy. Then going into glass blowing and then meeting this artist and, you know, working as a sculptor for many years and then scaling down to literally like small form sculpture, which is ended up being your jewelry, meeting the Polish dude who helped you make chain. I mean, it's so incredible to hear your story because it's really like, to me as an outsider listening to you talk about it, really more, you went through this process of discovery by just really like going with the flow and trusting your intuition and your gut.
Yeah. And then, you know, when hiring people that, you know, then you're creating a culture, you know, within the walls that you're working and, you know, and then, and hiring people that are smarter than you and are better even at you than at making things and stuff like that. Because then you can play off of each other and go like, oh, that worked, or, you know, because then here we are, you know, with this line of personalization and you know, how funny, how for me, then the discovery was more like, how do I make this available for everyone? Like, this is actually really cool. And I always say, you know, like the value of personalization is higher than the material that it's on, right? So
yes.
It's like, how, you know, how lucky are we now to be able to kind of learn from our experiences and you know, with my sister passing or my cousin passing or you know, watching, you know, people succeed in awesome things and not, you know, and be proud and you know, like when someone does a marathon, like, let's do your time. Like, that's bold, man. Like, I've never run a marathon. I really wanted to in college, but I got to 14 miles and I was like, this is crazy.
I have no desire to ever run a marathon. Let's just say that.
I know, but it's like, you know, so now what is so awesome about this collection is that I'm able to go to the stores across the country and like meet customers who have awesome things that they should be so proud of, like, you know, from a, you know, just the family that they grew up with, you know, like I have like a charm that has my sisters and my mom and dad and the longitude, latitude where we grew up. Or, you know, then you have a new baby, you've got, you've got good things and sad things and all of these, you know, all of these memories that we have as we kind of go through life. Everything that is in your past is created who you are today. And so whether it's good or bad, you have to be able to be empowered by it, right? Mm-hmm. And
exactly.
So, yeah, and so now I really feel like I love the opportunity to be able to kind of highlight those traits in every individual person. And you know, I think that, you know, for me, you know, having designed fashion for so many years, we're like, what's in, what's out, you know, da 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 da.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing something that has longevity. Mm-hmm. And you know, you still have that creative outlet because someone just like, you know, in art school when I was like, well, give me a quote, I'm like, well, you know, you're at a store and you're like, give me a story. And here we have a foundation of design in the shapes that we create. But then their story is, then we have to put it on the charms and we do, you know, we have different layouts and like a spiral design is really good for quotes or linear, you know, we have all these mm-hmm. different designs, which is so funny because when I first started, it was just name straight across, boom, that's it, you know. And then we hired this girl, Mallory. She was so funny. She had just graduated from high school. It was a summer job for her. And so she worked for us in the summertime and she would help us with mailers or this or that or the other thing. And then at the end of the summer, I said, I'll make you a charm for your graduation gift. And she was like, okay. And so she said, I want to do all okay. my best girlfriends. Yeah, she said, I want the initials of all my best girlfriends around the edge of the charm, and then I want my monogram in the middle. And I was like, whoa, that's such a good idea. And so that's where it's fun because I have the opportunity to have people's interactions, you know, like mm-hmm. create a design. So we're kind of working together as a team. You know?
Well, you know, it's so cool too. And it's, you know, there's a parallel between what you do and what I do in the sense that, you know, you're really creating and designing heirlooms based on people's experiences and developing a product that is like highly sentimental and is going to be cherished. And, you know, we were talking a little bit in the pre-interview and you were telling me some of the stories about how you had to like step away for a moment when you were at these trunk shows traveling because the stories of your clients were just like intense. And I think the cool part about it is that through your process of discovery, I mean, this is just what I'm observing, you've been able to really impact people's lives on like a super deep level, which is like you're creating meaning for them.
Yeah.
In a world maybe where there's like a lot of chaos or, you know, sadness, even, you know, unknown uncertainty or whatever it is, you know. Or even happy moments, obviously, you know, like people are, you know, celebrating life or, you know, remembering, you know, someone who's passed. So
yeah.
It's pretty incredible. And it's been really fun to sort of like see the evolution of Heather B. Moore as a designer, you know, from back in the days when we were just starting out at those, our little pipe and drape trade show booths.
Oh my God. I swear to God. If I think of all of the different ways I used to display jewelry, like I would be like, I'm not buying those traditional jewelry things. I remember designing an entire display out of linoleum, like floor tile. And then I got so engrossed.
Linoleum?
Yeah. Oh my God. I should send you pictures. It's so funny. And then I got so distracted by the linoleum. I started making bezeling linoleum and I made linoleum rings. I made linoleum. Like that line didn't fly.
They're like, no, that reminds us of like our dirty kitchen floor from childhood.
I know. And I was like, okay, so that was a line that maybe wasn't so successful, but that's okay.
You have to test, right? Everything's about testing.
Test the waters and, you know, like, okay, so bezeling linoleum isn't maybe the best idea. but it was, you know, a good, we'll call it an exercise. So, you know, like for every good design, there's probably two bad ones, right? So, and you have to like pick yourself up and wipe yourself off and say, okay, so that one wasn't so good, but you should still be proud of it because yes. I think you might have thought of something. Maybe just going through that exercise, you created a solution for something down the line that you don't know about yet, but there'll be a good reason. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So I don't know what that means, but.
No, I think it's so true, you know, and I think back to like my evolution as a designer, you know, what I'm doing now is like so different than what I started with. But also like I can see like a clear pattern of like that evolution, how it changed and the things that I tested that worked and the things that I tested that didn't work.
And what maybe you circled back to and then incorporated, and that's the importance of the process of discovery. That's the importance of like, okay, doing something and then you bring something in and that little, maybe one, you know, tenth of that exercise you're going to bring back and it'll make a big difference in, you know, something forthcoming. So
I love that. I mean, Heather, your story is just fascinating. Before we go, are there any parting words of advice you'd like to give to the jewelry designers listening today?
Oh my gosh. I think that it would be to not beat yourself up.
That's good.
To live every day as if it's your first. And to, you know, be ready. And I think that when someone says, can you do this? And maybe it's not something it's in your comfort zone. I say, tell them you can do it.
Try it.
And then figure it out. Because, you know, I mean, if you only offered what you knew, then you wouldn't be pushing yourself hard enough.
And it's all about learning and this continual process of learning and discovering and the process of discovery.
Yeah. I mean, I totally believe in that.
All right, darling. So great speaking with you today. Can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah. Well, they can go on heathermorejewelry.com. And we've got a fun, so that's kind of like our website that's a little like classic but then Instagram, I love our Instagram because it's more studio shots and stuff like that.
What's your Instagram?
It's Heather Moore Jewelry.
Heather Moore Jewelry. Awesome.
Yeah.
Check out our Instagram, stalker.
Yeah, exactly. And then let's see, what else are we on? We I know we do Twitter and Pinterest is always fun because other people post their stories and stuff like that. And right now we're working on a video compiling videos of people's stories, because that's just a must. It's so fun listening to what people have collected over time, because every person I've never met one person that has the same necklace as the other. They all kind of portray their own individual style, and so hopefully we'll get those videos up. You know,
that's so cool. I love
that. Sooner than later, yeah. It's tough keeping up with today's technology. I mean, you know, like it's
so many things.
I know, wild, wild west of opportunity within, you know, social media marketing and stuff.
I know, really.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So, and I think the only other advice I would say based on the, you know, just the words of marketing is huge. And I think a lot of people, you know, don't value it enough and need to know that like designing is like 10% of your business.
Yes.
And it's the outreach and it's the photography and it's the, you know, follow-up and the good communication with your stores, being a solution provider, you know, for every store owner, because every store is different. And it's like the store owner has a canvas and you're part, one of the colors of their canvas. And so every individual store has their own, you know, you have to be able to kind of work with them and help them. And, you know, that's just really important too. You know, even sometimes when I have a design and I'm like, you know, maybe we're looking at the numbers and we're like, wow, we didn't sell any of those. And I'm like, well, let's look at our marketing of that one piece, because I still stand behind that, but I don't think we actually gave it 100% of the marketing end. So, you know, like you got always, you know, when you're doing the process of discovery, you also, you know, kind of, we were saying when we talked a couple weeks ago, you have to be like a casual observer of yourself.
Yes.
And constantly critique and look at you know, hold yourself accountable for your presentations and, you know, and for your follow-up and for your communication, like all of that stuff. You're not going to have good outcome if you're not giving it all, the whole package 100%. So.
Absolutely. Gosh, thank you so much for sharing all these insights today with us, Heather.
Sure. My pleasure.
Thank you all so much for listening today. If you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to do us a huge favor. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, rate the show, and write us a little review. I'm super excited to keep bringing you very valuable content and inspiration every single week. I'm Tracy Matthews. Take care until next time.